Bertie Ahern is quite an unusual politician in southern terms. He was lower middle class Dublin. On the surface, he was not a particularly ideological politician. He was a very successful politician within his own Fianna Fáil party and was viewed as somebody whose primary interest would have been the economy, dealing with trades unions, the day-to-day running of government. He's not rhetorically particularly strong. He's in no way an orator. He's not a particularly good speaker. Didn't seem to come over that well in interviews. But he was very popular and quite liked by the public. To some degree, he inherited the process that led to the Good Friday Agreement. This process had been going on since about 89 or 90. So Bertie Ahern didn't put this process together. He inherited this process when he became leader of Fianna Fáil when he was Taoiseach. So he's by no means the architect of the early stages of it. Once he saw the possibility of preserving or of keeping permanent ceasefire, he committed himself to the process. His best and most distinctive contribution is probably his ability to get on with almost all parties to the negotiations. He was also willing to stand down Sinn Féin and their demands that increased exponentially. He would have, like most Irish governments, come from a position of sympathy and understanding with the SDLP position as articulated in particular by John Hume. So John Hume would have been his steering light, but in the negotiations he made a point of dealing with all parties, but in particular of trying to manage and restrain Sinn Féin's demands. On the night before the Good Friday Agreement was signed, it looked like nothing was going to happen. It looks like it was going to be failure. And to, if you like, add insult to injury, Sinn Féin appeared with a list of demands. As somebody said, there were 50 new demands. The interesting thing about Ahern is he's renowned as a negotiator. So while others might have just given up and said, given the magnitude of what they're looking for at the last minute, let's forget it, he systematically worked through point after point. So he's got formidable powers of concentration and application that were probably crucial in shoving Sinn Féin across the line at the final stages. Articles 2 and 3 of the Irish Constitution had been put in place in 1937, when the Constitution was enacted. Articles 2 and 3 basically claimed all of Ireland as the national territory and presupposed that the end of partition was an inevitable outcome of history. Removing Articles 2 and 3 had been talked about in the 1970s, had been talked about in the 1980s at the time of the Anglo-Irish Agreement. But to remove Articles 2 and 3 required a referendum, because you cannot change any clause of the Irish Constitution without popular referendum. So for Ahern to decide to attempt to remove Articles 2 and 3 was a very significant decision, because he had to be able to sell it to his own electorate. In order to sell it to his own electorate, he had to persuade them that the Good Friday Agreement was a fair and stable means of establishing peace in Northern Ireland in the long term. And in return for that, he could persuade, if you like, the Irish electorate to give up what had been a kind of deep-rooted aspect of Irish political life since the foundation of the Irish state, that is, the assumption that Ireland would not remain eternally partitioned. I suppose you have to think about the aims of the Irish government in the negotiations overall. First of all, they wanted peace on the island of Ireland, because the violence in the north had affected the reputation of the whole island for decades. It also threatened to undermine the south. Secondly, Ahern's government saw themselves as some kind of protectors of the minority within Northern Ireland. If you were really honest about the Good Friday Agreement from an Irish government nationalist point of view, what it did was delivered equality for Northern nationalists, gave them protection, if you like, gave them equality, and meant that they were no longer, in their own eyes, second-class citizens in the territory which they occupied.